Just so you know, this show is about scary stuff. So don't say I didn't warn you guys. And remember, don't be scared.
Episode 127, Malice Aforethought, The Murder of Lily Peters.
War Baby here with another episode of Murderous Minors.
I hate that it's Mother's Day, and again I'm bringing you one of the worst nightmares a parent could ever dream up, because last year at this time we were talking about the murder of Tristan Bailey, whose accused murderer Aiden Fucci is set to go to trial in November. By now, I'm sure some of you have heard about Ileana Peters, who went by Lily, the 10-year-old Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin girl who didn't come home from her aunt's house on the evening of Sunday, April 24th, 2022. She was found murdered the following day. Before we even begin to talk about what has happened, I want to let you know that I spoke to Lily's mother, Jennifer, and she gave me permission to discuss her daughter's murder and to discuss her responses to the online hate she's received since details about her family have been released in the press. A lot has taken place in the almost 2 weeks that have passed, and I wanted to catch everyone up as this is a gut-twisting case that has seen some truly disturbing revelations come to light already, and it's yet another case we'll continue to follow. Before you listen further, please know that this episode does contain descriptions of sexual assault and homicidal violence against a young child, so please be advised. Lily Peters lived with her father in tiny Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, population just under 15,000, in the northwestern part of the state and about 100 miles east of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Reports indicate that it was about 9:15 on Sunday, April 24th, that Lily's dad notified police that she was missing. The Peters house on East Birch Street and the aunt's house on North Grove Street are approximately a quarter of a mile or 0.4 kilometers apart, and Lily had ridden her bicycle there earlier that day. The Parkview Elementary School fourth grader reportedly has one brother, and her mother lives in a different city in Wisconsin. Lily's home and her aunt's home are separated most noticeably by a main road called North High Street, along with Duncan Creek, a narrow waterway that runs a sort of squiggly north-south direction. Less than 1 mile northwest of Lily's aunt's house sits the Jacob Leinenkrugel Brewery, with the Pig Alley walking trail and wooded areas lining the way. It's really lovely, especially in the winter, according to the pictures that I looked at. But that beauty is now scarred, as it was in those woods along the trail between the end of North Grove Street and the Leinenkugel's Brewery parking lot where Lily's father found her bike. 70 officers from about 20 law enforcement agencies eventually came together to search overnight, and by the following morning at 9:15 a.m. on Monday, April 25th, Lily's body was located further into the woods off the trail. She'd been found 12 hours after she was reported missing to police, and autopsy results revealed that Lily died by homicide from blunt force trauma and strangulation. The chief held a series of press conferences on Monday and Tuesday, April 25th and 26th, 2022, to keep the public updated.
Good afternoon, and thank you for coming. My name is Matthew Kelman. I'm the chief of police for the Chippewa Falls Police Department. This is an update on the missing person case that was first reported last night. At about 9 o'clock last night, the Chippewa Falls Police Department received information that Ileana Lily M. Peters, age 10, was missing from the city of Chippewa Falls. Lily's father reported that she had not returned home from a visit from her aunt's house at 400 in the 400 block of North Grove Street. Officers later located a bicycle in the woods near the walking trail between the end of North Grove Street and the Leinenkrugel's Brewery parking lot. At about 9:15 this morning, a body was located in the wooded area near the walking trail. The Chippewa County Coroner's Office has now confirmed that this is the body of Lily Peters. At this point, we are considering this a homicide investigation. We do not have anyone in custody at this time, and we are continuing to follow up on multiple leads.
By later on Tuesday, April 26th, the search warrant was executed at Lily's aunt's house on North Grove Street, and another press conference was made to announce that a suspect had been arrested for Lily's murder.
First and most importantly, earlier this evening, we arrested a juvenile suspect in this case. The suspect was not a stranger. Suspect was known to the victim. We do not believe there is any danger to the community at this time. While nothing will bring Lily Peters back or change what happened, we are very grateful to be able to deliver this news for the family and for the community. While driving through town and through our communities, we can see the purple ribbons, and honestly, I would expect nothing less from the Chippewa Falls community, Chippewa Valley, and our surrounding communities. A tremendous amount of work has gone into this investigation by a large team of investigators, including those at the federal, state, county, and local level. Law enforcement has been working on this case 24 hours a day since this call came in less than 48 hours ago. First of all, I want to thank the community for the over 200 tips that we have received. These tips were critical to solving this case. Our security team has and will continue to hold the crime scene, which is the wooded area around the footpath between the north end of Grove Street and the Linacougal Brewery parking lot. This is important to the integrity of the investigation, and we would ask that you continue to avoid this area. The Wisconsin Department of Justice Crime Lab processed the crime scene last night. At that time, the body of Lily Peters was removed by the coroner's office. A forensic autopsy is being conducted. Investigators executed a search warrant at 422 North Grove Street. Evidence was collected and additional interviews were conducted. That is all the new information I have at this time. There is still much work to be done.
You heard the police chief reference tips that help crack the case, and reports indicate that an anonymous comment on a true crime subreddit thread made prior to the arrest could have been instrumental in leading investigators toward another kid as a suspect. The initial investigation did not appear to be looking at juvenile suspects, but seemed to be more focused on potential adult predators in the area as police increased security around Lily's school and warned the public to be vigilant about their children's safety. The comment left by user HomeSliceNation4 read, quote, "What's scary is I was playing Pokemon Go in the park that day, walking along that very same trail. My stomach turns when I think that I saw that girl in a pink or purple hoodie on her bike with another kid on my way out. I have a suspicion that it could be another kid that did it." Other users on the site called in the tip, and one of them actually corresponded with an officer about the details in the comment. And less than 24 hours after the comment was posted, a juvenile was indeed arrested and charged with the sexual assault and murder. Following the press conference announcing the arrest, the chief wouldn't answer any questions regarding whether or not the suspect is related to Lily, and neither would the prosecutor, Wade Newell, although because the suspect was arrested around the time that the aunt's house was searched, speculation pointed toward Lily's cousin. This assumption was only given more credence once the 14-year-old's initials were revealed in court. The juvenile suspect had his initial hearing the day after his arrest on Wednesday, April 27th, 2022, where the charges were filed and his bond was set. Details unknown to this point were also made public at this time, but the judge sealed the search warrants and the criminal complaint at the start of the hearing. They referred to him only as CP-B, although his identity and many personal and family details, like the criminal records of Lily's and CPB's parents, are now all over the internet via some particular overseas news outlets. Readers online immediately began trolling them, and Lily's mom hit back at their inappropriate and insensitive behavior, which is what I saw and made me reach out to her. Writing, quote, "As Lily's mother, I can only say I'm ashamed of you folks out there judging us from behind a screen. What makes zero sense is how quickly you judge my family based on a timeline and assumptions you can only speculate on, since it's privy to the investigation that those details not be released. I hope you never endure this kind of heartache. Here's a bit of what went down at CPB's initial appearance in court, which he attended remotely from the Northwest Regional Juvenile Detention Center in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Attorney Newell, did you have any arguments on bond for this matter?
Yes, Your Honor. The state is requesting a $1 million cash bond with the condition that he have no contact with any juveniles and not possess any dangerous weapons. The state is asking for a very high cash bond for a defendant of 14 years of age, but given the statements that the defendant made to law enforcement that his intention was to rape and kill the victim from the get-go when he left the house with the victim going down the trail, state believes that there is a need to protect the community and also a concern regarding the defendant fleeing given the severity of the punishment he is facing for all three of these charges. That gives him a very big incentive not to resolve the matter and to flee the area, but the protection of community also is necessary in this case, given his statements, once again, regarding his intentions and also his statements regarding the fact that when he did get off of the trail, punched the victim in the stomach, knocked her to the ground, essentially strangled her, hit her with a stick before strangling her to the point of death before he then sexually assaulted her. Based upon all that, the state believes that a $1 million cash bond is appropriate with the two conditions outlined.
All right, Attorney Harless or Attorney Schmidt, any objections?
Yes, Your Honor, to the cash amount. This is Attorney Schmidt. I'll be addressing the bond argument. We're asking the court to impose a $100,000 cash bond. We agree that cash is appropriate in this case. The charges are extremely serious. We do not feel that setting bond in excess of $100,000 is necessary or appropriate in this case. We do not believe that Mr. PB is a flight risk. He is 14 and an eighth grader. He cannot drive. He is not in a position to raise much money, frankly, at all on his own. He resides with his mother. He is a lifetime resident of Chippewa County. We believe that a $100,000 cash bond should be adequate to ensure that Mr. PB does not flee, that he has a realistic opportunity for some sort of pretrial release, as limited as I think that would be. That's all then.
All right, thank you. All right. The court has considered the arguments of counsel here today. This is a serious charge, and because of serious charges, there are serious consequences, which gives a greater incentive for individuals not to want to return to court when they are facing those charges. And so I also need to consider the threats to the community. The information that was disclosed by the district attorney shows that this was a serious threat to the community. And so the court is concerned that this could be a further threat if the individual was no longer in custody. The court will order a $1 million cash bond with the conditions that the defendant not contact any juveniles and have no dangerous weapons. Attorney Harless or Attorney Schmidt, I believe, or I'm not aware of whether or not the defendant has any siblings that I could accept this from that could be supervised. I would allow that to have supervised contact between any family members that are his siblings, as long as that contact is supervised.
The state is alleging very specifically that CPB followed Lily out of her aunt's house and out onto the trail with the intention of sexually assaulting and murdering her. The criminal complaint was unsealed yesterday, and it indicates that CPB told detectives that, quote, he said he went to help Lily get her bike as she was leaving to go home, then rode his hoverboard with her on the trail, following her with his plan already in mind. He told police he asked Lily to go explore the woods with him and they went off the trail, at which time he murdered, then sexually assaulted her. He told police he was scared after that and went home where, quote, he showered and put his dirty clothes in the laundry. Once the news that Lily was missing began to spread, CPB realized that, quote, he needed to hide her better and returned to her body, drug her a few feet, and covered her with leaves. Following that hearing, Prosecutor Wade Newell clarified some specifics about how CPB's case is being handled.
In Wisconsin, first-degree intentional homicide, which is the first count in the criminal complaint, by law, starts originally in adult court. So it is not a juvenile that brought into adult court. While he's still a juvenile, it's an adult court case. So the three charges he has is first-degree intentional homicide. The second count is first-degree sexual assault. The third count is first-degree sexual assault of a child under age 13 resulting in great bodily harm. The first charge applies to the victim of any sexual assault. Count number two would only apply if the victim was of a certain age. Regarding keeping it in adult court, I think it's premature to make any determinations regarding that at this time. I think it's a very serious case that needs to be dealt with as is intended by the law.
Sometimes, after a long, stressful day of working and running the household, I may suddenly disappear. But there's no need to worry. I just couldn't wait another minute to decompress by playing Best Fiends, the free-to-download mobile puzzle game I still can't put down. I tell you all about it whenever I get the chance. From the adorable fiends you'll collect and evolve that will only get stronger, to the new events that are added all the time, there's no better time to start smashing some levels, with thousands out there just waiting for you. And with offline play, you can enjoy Best Fiends anywhere you like and anytime you choose. No internet connection is required to play. I'm currently on level 861 and I love the feeling of getting one step closer to unlocking another island. And with the brand new events always popping up, you'll have so many chances to earn exclusive in-game items, rewards, and characters. Download your new favorite getaway, Best Fiends, for free today on the App Store or Google Play. You'll even get $5 worth of in-game rewards when you reach level 5. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends. Right from the start, the state is saying that CPB demonstrated malice aforethought, another way to say premeditated murder, giving the appearance that his case could remain in the adult system as a first-degree intentional murder charge. That's how it stands right now, and that's how it'll remain unless the defense attorney files that reverse waiver to send CPB's case to be dealt within the juvenile system. That's what happened in another case out of Chippewa County, Wisconsin, involving the death of 6-month-old Jackson Hunter. He attended daycare in a rural home that also housed foster children and was fatally injured there on the day before Halloween 2018. Police responding to the 911 call made at 4:30 p.m. found the baby unresponsive and bleeding, with head injuries which would lead to his death 2 days later. The sheriff's department stated that Jackson had been transported first to local St. Joseph's Hospital, but was soon flown to Gillette Hospital in St. Paul, Minnesota, due to the severity of his trauma, which had raised the suspicion of doctors. These child abuse medical specialists informed authorities that the baby's injuries were not the result of an accident, but of child abuse. They sent photos showing how, quote, a tread pattern on the shoes appeared to match the patterned bruising on the head of the victim, and indicated that the bilateral skull fractures and bilateral subdural hematoma that Jackson suffered from were consistent with the application of heavy force or pressure. When the foster mother slash daycare owner was questioned, she told police that she'd laid Jackson down for a nap at 3 p.m., after which three other kids arrived from school, a 10-year-old girl who'd been in the foster home for 41 days, and two 6-year-olds who went to the daycare. Two other children were also in the daycare at that time, both aged 2, and all 5 of those children were, quote, in and out of the house for short periods of time, playing as the baby napped and their caregiver was outside working in the yard. It soon emerged that the 10-year-old girl had been inside by herself at some point, seen sitting alone in the bay window, even though the kids had been told to play outside. 2 days after he was injured, Jackson Hunter died, and the house on 102nd Street in Tilden, Wisconsin, was searched for anything that could have been attributed to his injuries. The 10-year-old girl was interviewed for the first time that day as well, and quote, the interview was not consistent from what investigators had discovered at this point in the investigation. According to District Attorney Wade Newell, during her second interview the following day on November 2, 2018, quote, she stated she was holding the child and that's when she dropped the child. The child hit its head on the footstool and then the child started crying and she panicked and didn't know what to do and didn't want to get into trouble and then she proceeded to stomp on the 6-month-old's head. The girl was arrested and sent to juvenile detention for 2 months and was charged with first-degree intentional homicide by someone older than 10. She was then transferred to the adult unit at the Winnebago Mental Health Institute, with her bail set at $50,000. 9 months into her incarceration, the show Inside Edition aired an interview with her mother, who said that she believed her daughter's account describing Jackson's death as an accident, saying that, quote, there is no way that it was done in any type of intentional way. She said her daughter was not the monster being portrayed in the press and described the 10-year-old as, quote, beautiful, intelligent, smart, loves to sing, loves to play. The mom went on to explain that her daughter does suffer from some kind of mental illness and had suicidal ideations in the past. She said that they were turned away from seeking treatment, saying that, quote, they denied my daughter because she wasn't 12 years old. Their only recourse, she said when interviewed, was to place her daughter in a county-licensed program at that home daycare center 3 days a week. She stressed when interviewed that if her daughter had been placed in an adequate treatment facility, she would have never been at that house with baby Jackson and said that, quote, it's a sad story all the way around. Not just one family is suffering, but there's two. Jackson Hunter's father told ABC 7 Chicago just after his son was killed that, quote, I waited 37 years for my own little baby boy. He was happy smiles all the time. Regarding seeing his son's accused killer in court, he said that, quote, as opposed to seeing it as a 10-year-old girl, I saw it as the person who killed my son. And she, in my opinion, deserved to be in shackles or handcuffs. She's a criminal. He has since started the Win for Jax Foundation to benefit child victims of crime. Regarding the 10-year-old, she was found incompetent to stand trial at first, and then her case was waived to juvenile court. She was never identified, and the details of how the juvenile system handled her case remain sealed. In December 2020, Jackson's parents sued the Chippewa County Department of Health Services, its director, and the foster care coordinator, alleging that placing the girl at the home posed a threat to the more vulnerable children in their care. These court documents lean toward a completely different story than what was portrayed on Inside Edition. In arguing for the case to be dismissed in 2021, federal court attorneys wrote that had the daycare owner, quote, had sight or sound on her or Jackson, two children entrusted in her care, it's unlikely this incident would have happened. Attorneys for the Department of Health Services wrote that, quote, the girl had been in foster care at that home for 41 days by the time Jackson was assaulted, and that the baby's mother, quote, had no concerns with her playing with or holding Jackson. The foster mother and owner of the daycare described the girl as being a, quote, sweet young lady. They also noted in their filing that, quote, in 2018, Chippewa County served 217 children in out-of-home care, including foster care, kinship, and residential placement. Approximately 84% of those placements were related to caregiver methamphetamine abuse, similar to the girl. However, in the previous 10 years, and apart from this, no other child placed by Chippewa County in out-of-home care has caused the death of another child. Just over 2 years after the suit was filed, on March 7, 2022, a federal judge issued an 18-page long ruling that dismissed the civil suit, finding that employees of the Chippewa County Human Services Department did nothing wrong when placing the girl in proximity to a baby because they had no reason to think that she was violent or a threat. Jackson's father said he will likely file an appeal. Following the discovery of Lily, some around Chippewa Falls questioned why an Amber Alert had not been issued once police knew that a 10-year-old child hadn't come home. Police mentioned in the statement right after Lily went missing that her disappearance didn't meet the criteria for an Amber Alert, because the law is very clear that while Lily was under the age of 17 and not thought to be a runaway or abducted by a parent and in danger, there was no suspect or description of a vehicle for the public to be looking for, which is the other requirement. There was just no evidence of a possible abduction, and therefore no Amber Alert was issued, leading a local father named Eric Henry to quickly start a Change.org petition for a new kind of alert, named after Lily Peters and with its own set of parameters focused on helping to find any missing child. CPB was in court for the second time on Thursday, May 5, 2022, with a new defense attorney named Michael Cohen. The biggest thing that happened was the judge unsealed the criminal complaint at the request of the media. He did leave the search warrant sealed. Both of these are usually available to the public.
Let me say it this way, Judge. At this time, I object. I don't know. I don't want this case tried in the media. I haven't seen any search warrants, the returns thereof, the evidence. I certainly don't want that information in the public arena before I get a chance to review it and address it. I don't know that there's a need for the media to have this information right this minute. There may be a time in due course where I remove that objection. Perhaps that can be raised at the time of the June 24th hearing. But I have little to no information about this case, and I certainly don't want to be finding out about it first from some media outlet from England or California or Texas or wherever. I don't know that there's a need to review to release it now.
Okay. Just to bring you up to speed, Attorney Cohen, at the previous hearing, I ordered that the complaint be held under seal, and that if it were to ever be released, that all names of any juveniles be redacted, except for the initials of the defendant. And so therefore, no names of any juveniles or dates of birth would be included as part of any release. But I note your objection. As noted, our legislature has enacted a policy which says that there is a presumption for complete public access. And so I am going to grant the request of the party seeking the criminal complaint in this matter, and that complaint will be released to the public and to those parties who have requested it, subject to redaction by the court of the names of all juveniles or any witnesses who may be mentioned, as well as any addresses and the dates of birth of any parties.
The complaint was released actually yesterday on Friday, May 6th, with details pertinent to the juveniles redacted. The eighth grader's name and identity remain officially undisclosed. CPB continues to be held at the Juvenile Detention Center in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and a status conference has been set for June 24, 2022. In the midst of this tragedy and heartbreak, Lily's mother Jennifer's message remains strong and clear. Quote, "If you cannot offer kindness, don't offer anything. My daughter was kind. If you truly want to be part of bringing justice, you can do right by my daughter and model something she lived by, kindness."